Peace be with you. I am Bruce Wozniak. This is Catholic Sports Radio, located at the intersection of your faith life and sports life, and on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and lots of other platforms. My sincere thanks for listening. Do please help me spread the word about this show. I'm always glad to see more people discovering it, but I do need help in bringing more people to Catholic Sports Radio. I would greatly appreciate if you would tell others to listen in as well, whether they are Catholic or not, and whether they are into sports or not. Hopefully you've been listening long enough to know that there are really moving stories and helpful lessons coming out of the conversations on the show every week that very well just might be what someone needs to hear. So I'm grateful for whatever you can do to bring more and more listeners to this ministry community. The show website is catholicsportsradio.net, where you'll find lots to engage with, including logos to click on to follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. I do love hearing from listeners, so please feel free to get in touch through any of those platforms or by sending me a message through the contact section of the website. Now on to my ministry moment for this episode. The 2022 Major League Baseball regular season is underway. It's time once again to see all the different subplots that play out over the course of a game and a season for your favorite team as well as all the others. I'm thinking today about some of the conflict that occurs with some degree of regularity. Specifically, picture this scene, if you would, one that has become quite familiar to anyone who attends MLB games and or watches them on TV. It starts with a batter arguing a call with an umpire, then the manager comes out of the dugout. Next, we then see one or more of the other umpires getting called over. Together, they then look at the replay to only then get on a headset and talk to MLB rules officials in New York. Conflict resolution is never fun to have to deal with, but we must know the right way to handle it so that we can still be Christian-like in our approach to an uncomfortable situation that we face in sports or in our daily lives. Fortunately, we learn from the New Testament in Matthew chapter 18 the following teaching, which comes from verses 15 to 17. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have won over your brother. If he does not listen, take one or two others along with you, so that every fact may be established on the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell the church. If he refuses to listen to even the church, then treat him as you would a Gentile or a tax collector. Moving on now with this week's episode, my guest has been running for almost 49 years and has run over 72,000 miles, which means he has averaged running 4 miles a day for almost 49 years. 3 years ago, he won the State of Washington 6K Cross Country Championship and the Regional Championship. Back in his college days, he started at the University of Oregon and participated in multiple intramural sports and ran on his own, including running his first marathon, before transferring to Oregon College for his junior year, running cross country and track there. He had been a wrestler in high school, although he did end up doing cross country as well. He has also coached extensively, including getting a job in the fall of 1984 at Redmond High School, where he coached cross country and track and didn't retire until June of last year. Welcome to Catholic Sports Radio, Dennis Villeneuve.
Hi, Bruce. Hi, everyone.
Dennis, hello. Thank you for being on the show. I'm grateful for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
There's no question from that introduction that you are a runner. I'm almost thinking that you might have just come in from a runner, are going to do so after we finish. But something else that's also clear, you are very much a Catholic.
Yeah, that's right. Both my parents were cradle Catholics, and so I was born a cradle Catholic, and I have siblings, and we were all in that same boat, and so I grew up from the church and just never left, and attended Mass pretty much on a regular basis for all these years. And no matter where I've been or what I've done, kept that kind of going along. And it's a very comforting part of my life.
And what was that family size? How many siblings did you have?
I have two brothers and four sisters, so I'm the third of the seven children.
Wow, wow. Well, share with the audience about bouncing around when you were a young boy, but yet still keeping up with your Catholic faith despite changing addresses and parishes.
Sure. So my parents didn't have too much money, and so as the family grew, then they had to kind of find another place to live. So I'm not sure in the first years exactly all the different places, but I know we moved frequently. When I was five, then we moved from Portland, Oregon to Eugene, Oregon. And then there, of course, I have a memory of everything, and we moved multiple times and through multiple parishes. And my parents were very devout, and we always made sure we were either in a school or in a CCD program or something of that nature, and then going to Mass and practicing the sacraments.
Yeah, you read my mind, because I was thinking that you told me in the lead up to today that there was a public school in there somewhere. I think there might have been a Catholic school at some point in there as well.
Yeah. So first grade, kindergarten in Portland, I went to a public school. And then when we moved to Eugene, the first grade, I was in a public school. But then my parents moved, and I went to a Catholic school in the nearby city. And then they moved back to Eugene, and I went to a different Catholic school for three more years. And then my parents really didn't have enough money to pay for all the kids in Catholic school, so I attended public school from that point on.
Well, I mentioned in the intro that you were a wrestler in high school, but tell us the story about how that actually led you to getting into cross country.
Sure. So in wrestling, I was very small. When I was a sophomore, my first year of wrestling, I was about 5 foot tall and I weighed about 110 pounds. So wrestling was a natural sport for me to do. And then I had fun at it and had the camaraderie of the teammates and all that. So I continued with the wrestling. And then when I was a senior, some of my friends turned out for cross country to get in shape. I was working a job, and so I decided I wasn't going to do that. But then they kept telling me how much fun they were having, and I thought, well, I could rearrange my hours a little bit. So I turned out for cross country halfway through the season. And the first day I ran, I think, 3 miles, and then the next day was a meet, and I ran in that, and I ran in a JV race, and I placed second overall, and I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. So that was the beginning of my running career. So that would have been the fall of 73. Yeah.
I believe by the end of that year, you had gone up to varsity. Is that correct?
Yeah. I made the varsity team at the end and ran in the league championship race. So that was a fairly good accomplishment for just starting.
Yeah, very much so. We've heard other guests on this show who are or were runners talk about how you can use that quiet alone time out there training or competing to be in conversation with God. Are you someone that found being on a run was a good time for that? Or is it a case of, gosh, you know what, Bruce, it just never clicked for me that I could do that. I wasn't hip to the idea of faith and sports mixing, so I just left God for when I was at Mass on Sundays.
No, what's one of my favorite parts of running is, once you get into shape and you're running, you don't have to think about it. You can think about whatever you want to. Mm. And I like running alone more than with a group. I mean, don't get me wrong, running with a group is fine and it's fun, but I wouldn't want to do that every day. I like my time out there in nature, just me and my thoughts. And certainly many prayers and meditations and whatnot have occurred during those countless miles that you described. And, it's kind of a favorite part of my day because you sort of can have a stream of consciousness and go wherever you want. So whatever's on your mind can flow out. And it's a good stress reliever, and it feels like, a good connection with God.
Yeah, I'm sure. Both at the University of Oregon and at the Oregon College of Education, you still were able to get the best of both worlds, meaning resources to complement your faith life and athletic opportunities to pursue running?
Yes, that's right. So at the University of Oregon, I turned out for lots of intramural sports that I was kind of too small for. So I did like flag football and basketball and things like that that I always wanted to try to do. And so that was very good for me to experience a lot of different sports. Also, at the University of Oregon, they also had intramural cross country and track and field, believe it or not. So I got to do those also. And I was so early in my running career that the University of Oregon is one of the top programs in the nation. So I wouldn't have been good enough, you know, to make their team. But I just kept running on my own, which I enjoyed. And then they had a Newman Center at Oregon. And so that was fun to go to meet like-minded people. And I wasn't too much into the frat sorority party scene or anything like that. And so it was nice to have a place to go to meet with people that were, you know, more like-minded, like I said, and more in tune with the things that I was interested in. And then when I transferred to Oregon College of Education, because it was a smaller college, then it allowed me the opportunity to compete in both cross country and track and field there. And then they also had a very nice Newman Center. It was even smaller, more intimate, because just a fewer number of people. And our priest there was wonderful. And he was actually presided at my wife and I's wedding.
Oh, wow. Very nice.
In life, so, yeah.
Very nice.
That was cool.
Well, folks, Dennis shared with me his date of birth, which I'm assuming means he's okay with you knowing his age, which I think helps add context to the accomplishments that he continues to rack up as a still active runner. I want to have him explain to you what, for example, the events are that he competes in that are called Masters Championships, meaning obviously not the golf event in Augusta, Georgia, known for the winner getting the green jacket. But before I have him do that, I do have two more people that I need and want to thank. They both sent in a financial contribution for my ministry through the website. One is Tom Fox, who was the guest back on episode 158, and the other is David Perez, a listener from Las Vegas. I was in touch with both of them over email, and they each gave me the okay to say their name on the air. It really means a lot to me when someone helps me out that way. First, yes, of course, it absolutely helps me out with the many, many expenses that I face in operating this ministry on and off the air, especially as someone who doesn't get any income from doing this, nor do I have any sponsors, which means I otherwise have to try to find a way to come up with money out of my own pocket to take on what you've heard me cite on many examples as pretty challenging expenses that I've taken on. Another reason why it means so much to me, though, when someone makes a financial contribution to Catholic Sports Radio is because it tells me that you find value in what I'm doing and that you enjoy Catholic Sports Radio and that you're getting benefit from listening to this show each week, whether that's a personal spiritual benefit that's helping your faith life or maybe just enjoyment, entertainment, but it's meaningful to you. That goes a long way with me to know that there is a place for this type of programming and you want to see it continue. Even though Lent is over and we won't be hearing calls anymore from our priests about prayer, fasting, and almsgiving, the church is always encouraging us all to prayerfully consider what we're doing in terms of tithing, which is where I would ask you to kindly consider supporting this ministry. Just as Tom Fox and David Perez did, you can easily use the blue Donate to CSR button on the homepage of CatholicSportsRadio.net to send your contributions securely online in whatever amount you wish. You put in what you're comfortable with. There's no drop-down menu of predetermined amounts for you to choose from. Alternatively, as some folks have chosen to do instead, you can get in touch with me through the contact section of CatholicSportsRadio.net to ask me for the mailing address where you can send a check. I'm happy to say the name on the air of anyone who makes a financial contribution to my Catholic Sports Radio ministry, or as some have asked me to do, you can remain anonymous. I'm truly grateful to everyone who listens, and I appreciate your considering supporting what I'm doing by making a donation. I'm blessed to be called to this, and I'm committed to giving back with my time and talent and working to move more people closer to Christ through Catholic Sports Radio. Dennis, back in 1996, you became a master's runner, and have been making top three finishes since the following year, 1997. Explain to the audience all about that classification and those events.
Sure. So, Bruce, there's different kinds of racing involved with runners. Cross country means it's a fall activity normally, and you're running over a variety of terrain. And then you have indoor and outdoor track, which seems fairly self-explanatory. Then you also have road races. And beyond that, you have trail and ultra running and all that sort of thing.
Wow.
So in my younger man's days, I was a good runner, but there were so many other good runners. I don't know if you remember, but back in the 70s and 80s, there was really a high running boom and lots of people were pretty good. And so I couldn't really place that high in any given local, state, or national endeavor. But according to the USATF, United States Association of Track and Field, you become a master's runner when you turn 40. So I was born in September of 56. So in September of 96, I turned 40. And so then I'm only being compared or measured to other runners of my age. And the way distance running works is you peak sometime in your mid to late 20s or maybe into your early 30s for a longer distance. Hmm. So then once you get rid of those faster people that you have to compete against, then it's easier to place higher. So what USATF does is they have national championship meets every year. And so you join USATF and then you can go and compete in these races. And they spread them around the country and they have cross-country championships, a couple of those, different distances in the fall, winter time, indoor track in the late winter, early spring, and then outdoor track in the summer. And so I've gone to some of those and competed and sometimes done pretty well. And the club I belong to out here in Washington is called Club Northwest. And we have a pretty strong team. So it's fun to be on a team of guys, like, for example, in a cross-country race. Because that's the best part about cross-country is being on a team and then having your team compete to try to do as well as they can.
Why do I think that with the Masters that it's kind of five-year increments? So you're competing, say, against 40 to 45-year-olds, 45 to 50, 50 to 55, and so on. Do I have that correct?
That is correct. Although what happens is in some cases, depending on the situation, they might say all 40-year-olds. They might do 10-year brackets sometimes. But individually, that's for a team more than an individual. Individually, for a USATF championship, it would be a five-year bracket. So since I turned 65 in September, now I'm in the 65 to 69-year-old bracket. And so that makes everything easier because I only have to race people in between those ages, 65 and 69.
Got it. Well, by no means do I want to overlook all the coaching that you did in your sport as well. My gosh, hired in fall 1984 at Redmond High School, where you coached cross country and track, and didn't retire until June of last year. You obviously had the opportunity to help lots and lots and lots of student athletes in their running career. And I have a hunch that you're going to tell me that even though it's a public school, you still were able to impact them in their personal lives to become better people and not just athletes.
Oh, correct. So my focus in coaching was always the healthy mind-body connection. And I always taught virtues and values that you could apply to running, but also to the classroom and then to relationships, your job, your personal life, et cetera. So that was my favorite part of coaching was getting a ton of people to come out and everybody comes every day, works hard, and everybody improves. And they have that social time, the cross-country track or co-ed high school sports. And so to me, it was, and nobody was cut. Everybody got to participate. So nobody had to sit on the sidelines or the bench or anything. I figured I coached somewhere around 4,000 athletes in my time, and taught somewhere over 5,000 in the classroom.
Wow. Amazing. And I'm sure you're going to tell me that whether they went on to do anything with their running career is second to seeing them go on to be successful fathers, mothers, husbands, wives, etc.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So the first athletes I coached are in their 50s now, and some of them are grandparents. I'm not even a grandparent yet, so they beat me to that. And the one of the things I really like about Facebook is I've been able to follow some of my students and athletes, you know, for decades now. And I've actually had quite a few, children of former students and athletes that I taught. So they would tell me about their mom or dad, but they said I was a good, you know, history teacher or a good cross country coach or something, because they had me and then I was teaching their child also.
Fantastic. And meanwhile, somewhere in all of what we've been talking about, you found and married a fellow Cradle Catholic.
I did. And I'm happy that I ended up transferring to Oregon College of Education, because that's where I met her. And we actually met at a school picnic, and I just happened to know a girl that was sitting next to her. So I sat down and was talking to her a little bit, and then she introduced me to her roommate. And that's how we first came to know who each other was. And it turns out she was Catholic, and that she was going to the Newman Center also, but it was right at the end of the school year. So I visited her a couple times in the summer, and then in the following fall is kind of when we started getting more interested. And then we went on a Newman Center retreat and started going out after that, and haven't stopped since.
And now you've been married for how many years?
I'll be 42 years in July.
Outstanding.
Thanks.
You and your wife participated in CFM. If you could share with the audience about what that is, as well as what you did during COVID, which came out of relationships from CFM.
Sure. So I go to a parish in Redmond, Washington called St. Jude, and they sponsor various programs periodically, you know, over the years. And one of them was called the Christian Family Movement. And the idea is you would meet in other people's homes in small groups and discuss various topics that related to faith exploration, etc. Anyway, the small group that we were in, the people were just wonderful, and they became our good friends. And even after the program ended, then we maintained our relationships, and we all had children around the same ages. So we attended various, you know, birthday parties and social gatherings, and we started camping every summer together, and just you know, continued that out. And so then with COVID, we of course stopped going to church, and we were live streaming. And then one of our friends suggested that we do a rosary, and we thought that was a wonderful idea. So we've been doing a Sunday night rosary every Sunday night at 8 p.m. And we all, whoever can come on that particular Sunday, if they're in town or available, whatever, participates. And we spend a few minutes just kind of talking about the week a little bit, and then we do a rosary, and we dedicate each family takes a decade, and we dedicate intentions to whatever. And then at the end, we kind of talk a little bit more about what's coming up, and then sign off. So it's a good end of the day for Sunday. And, you know, we've been doing lots of prayers for Ukraine and other things that have great need in today's world.
Well, that's wonderful. And I know a lot of people suffered what came to be known as Zoom burnout. And some people didn't have the best things to say about it. But there's a case there of using something like a tool called Zoom to do something for the good, and how nice it is that you were able to also build from these relationships that had started from a program that didn't even exist anymore and able to do all the different activities that you described. And then, as you said, these Sunday rosaries. Let's close by having you talk about your children as well as some of the roles that you have had yourself at your parish.
Sure. So my wife and I, we have three children, Andrew, Nathan, and Melissa. And we actually, interestingly enough, didn't have any children for the first 7 years of our marriage. And we didn't actually practice any birth control. We did the natural family planning. So that was, most people don't believe us when we tell them that, that's what we did. And they don't even know what it is, most people, but I'm sure you're familiar with that. So anyway, that was like, I think a really bonding time for us, you know, to just grow in our marriage and in our relationships of everything. And then mostly we trying to build up a financial scenario so that we could, you know, take care of our kids if we had them. So
are any of the children runners, by the way?
The second two ran 4 years of cross country and track with me and were team captains their senior year, voted on by their peers. So that was really fun. I was very fortunate dad in that for 12 years I had at least one kid in the car with me going to school. And then I had two of them in class with me in AP US History. And then those two also, like I said, did the 4 years of cross country, which is a fall sport, and track, which is a spring sport. So I got to spend a lot of time with my teenage children that, you know, probably most parents don't even come close to.
Yeah, that's wonderful. But please continue. I know you've had a lot of different roles within the parish.
Sure. So when we got to Washington in the summer of 82, and we went to a local parish in Bellevue, but then we bought our house in Redmond, and there was a parish just a mile away, a pretty new parish, St. Jude. And so we joined right away, and we had a wonderful pastor, and it was a great community. And so, yeah, my wife and I are always involved in wherever we are. And so I joined the choir initially, and she became a Eucharistic minister. And then I did the choir for a while, and then I decided I'd rather lecture. So I've been lecturing for like 30 plus years. And then I did a bunch of other stuff with St. Vincent de Paul and the parish council and RCIA. And my wife did Sunday school, CCD, and all those kinds of, even the nursery, helping, you know, during masses with the little kids that would be unable to sit through the mass and so forth. So we've been on church retreats. We've done just so many different things, you know, over the years. So, you know, it takes committed people to run a parish. It can't just be just coming to mass on Sunday. So we're very much involved. My wife always makes stuff for funerals, and we're always chipping in one way or the other. We have the safe parking people now, so we go up there and help them, and, you know, take them gift cards and food and different things. So we're always you know, putting around somewhere doing something. My son Nathan is an Eagle Scout, and he did the benches for our nature Stations of the Cross thing in our little forest by the church. So yeah, we're always you know, getting into something going on up there.
Just wonderful. Dennis, it's been great having you on the show. God bless you and your family. And a couple months early, but congratulations to you and your wife on 42 years of marriage. Just beautiful.
Oh, thank you, Bruce. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And folks, as a nod to Dennis being a longtime athlete, as you heard, still participating as a runner, let's close this episode with an athlete's prayer, and do it, of course, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I thank you, O God, for giving me a body which is fit and strong, and for making me able to use it well. In my training, help me never to shrink the discipline which I know that I need and that I ought to accept. In my leisure and in my pleasure, help me never to allow myself any indulgence which would make me less fit than I ought to be. When I compete with others, help me, win or lose, to play fair. When I win, keep me from boasting. When I lose, keep me from making excuses. Keep me from being conceited when I succeed and from being sulky when I fail. And help me always with goodwill congratulate a better man who beat me. Help me to live that I will always have a healthy body and a healthy mind. This I ask for your love's sake. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thanks so much for listening. This is Catholic Sports Radio. Find more at catholicsportsradio.net, as well as on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It is at Cath Sports Radio on all those. C-A-T-H, at Cath Sports Radio. I'm Bruce Wozniak, and remember, it's not whether you win or lose, it's that it's Jesus that you always choose.